apologize. Their presentation is the food insecurity, dietary quality and psychosocial factors among urban pregnant women. Ms. Persad, please come.
Good morning, everyone. I want to thank APHA Convention as well as Dr. Baroufi for having me here today. My name is Malini Persad, and I will be presenting data on a project I worked on titled Food Insecurity, Dietary Quality, and Psychosocial Factors Among Urban Pregnant Women. At this time, I would like to inform you that I have no personal financial relationships with commercial interests relevant to this presentation to disclose. So fetal programming was first introduced by David Barker in the early 1990s, and he postulated that certain chronic conditions were programmed in utero as a response to fetal undernutrition, resulting in permanent changes in both the anatomy and physiology of an infant. This implies that a woman's diet at the time of conception and during pregnancy has important effects on the health of her offspring. A number of studies support Barker's hypothesis. As you can see here, studies that looked at inadequate nutrition during pregnancy has been shown to be associated with a number of adverse birth outcomes, including neural tube defects, the risk of cleft palate, heart defects, low birth weight, preterm delivery, and even stillbirth. Other studies have looked at inadequate nutrition during pregnancy and associated long-term health outcomes, and these findings were primarily based on a group of individuals who were born to mothers who were exposed to the Dutch famine in 1944. As you can see, most of these individuals were at a greater risk for cardiovascular disease, stroke, hyperlipidemia, hypertension, decreased glucose tolerance, and therefore increased risk for diabetes, as well as an increased risk for lung disease, including obstructive airway disease and obesity. Other studies that were conducted among toddlers and infants showed that infants and toddlers born to mothers who had inadequate nutrition during their pregnancies had an increased risk of hospitalizations. So the USDA, in an effort to learn a little bit more about food intake among U.S. households, set up various food security classifications. As you can see here, there are two general categories of food security and food insecurity. And food insecurity was divided even further into two categories of food insecurity without hunger and food insecurity with hunger. The USDA defined food security as no reported indication of food access problems to as many as two indications of anxiety over food shortages. In terms of food insecurity without hunger, they define this as reports of reduced quality, diversity, and desirability of diet, with little or no indication of reduced food intake. And they define food insecurity with hunger as reports of multiple indication of disrupted eating patterns and reduced food intake. So the USDA sent out the National Food Security Survey, and this was given as a supplement to the current population survey, and approximately 50,000 households across the United States participated. As you can see here, in 2006, a large majority of 89.1% of U.S. households were food secure, but a little bit under 11% were food insecure. More specifically, 6.9% were food insecure without hunger, and 4% were food insecure with hunger. Taking a look at the demographic characteristics of food insecure homes in both without hunger and with hunger households, you can see that in the category of household compositions, the highest percentages of food insecurity is seen among single women with children. In both categories. In terms of race and ethnicities, most of these households were headed by Black non-Hispanic individuals. And in terms of area of residence, you can see that the highest percentages were found in principal cities. So now that we have a little bit of an understanding of what food insecurity is, I would like to talk about food insecurity and obesity, in particular, the hunger-obesity paradox. And this was first introduced in 1995 by Dr. William Diaz, who thought that both obesity and hunger can exist in the same person. And he came to this conclusion based on observations he made in his patient population. So a number of researchers went out to determine whether or not this paradox actually existed. In one study conducted in 1999 by Christine Olson of 198 women, she found a higher percentage of women that were obese coming from food insecure households when compared to food secure households. In another study conducted in 2001 by Marilyn Townsend of 4,537 women, she found that there was an increasing prevalence of being overweight with increasing severity of food insecurity. The last topic I'd like to bring to your attention is psychosocial well-being and food insecurity during pregnancy. And you can see here that food insecurity during pregnancy is associated with increased levels of perceived stress, depression and anxiety, and lower levels of self-esteem and sense of mastery. So with all of these things in mind, we had three specific aims for my project: to determine the prevalence of food insecurity in a population of women receiving care from an urban prenatal clinic, to determine if dietary quality and psychosocial factors are related to food insecurity, and to determine if there was an association between pre-pregnancy body mass index and food insecurity. So what we did was we took a convenient sample of women who were recruited from an urban prenatal clinic, and potential participants were approached while they were waiting to be seen by their physician. Trained research assistants gave the survey in an interview-like format, and women who completed the survey were given a small stipend for their time. So we used a number of different survey instruments in the study, including a sociodemographic form that collected information on age, marital status, education, ethnicity, race, income, and country of birth. We used the Block 98 food frequency questionnaire, which recorded the frequency of consumption and portion of 110 different food items from an array of food groups. And this scale was modified to reflect consumption over the last 3 months to ensure that we captured consumption during pregnancy. We used answers from the food frequency questionnaire to conduct a healthy eating index, and this assessed 10 different dietary components, of which included compliance to the food guide pyramid, as well as consumption of various different things, including fat, cholesterol, and sodium intake. We used the USDA food security scale, which evaluated the concern experienced by participants over the availability of food in the last 12 months. And we used the prenatal psychosocial profile, which consisted of three individual scales: the perceived stress scale, which evaluated stress associated with financial worries, recent moves, losses, and problems at work; the support behaviors inventory, which assessed support received from the participant's partner and other individuals in her life; and the Rosenberg self-esteem scale, which measured self-acceptance component of self-esteem. The final scale we used was the Center of Epidemiological Studies Depression Scale 10, which assessed the frequency of depressive mood during the past week. So 107 women were approached to participate in this study, of which 7 refused and 100 participated, and this accounted for a very high participation rate of 93.4%. So taking a look at the sample demographics, we can see here that a large majority of our sample were Black, 86%, 19% were Hispanic, the mean age of pregnancy was 22 years, over 70% were at least a high school graduate, most women were not married, which was 66%, the mean pre-pregnancy body mass index was 25.3, meaning that on average these women were overweight, a high percentage of 93% did participate in Medicaid, and we had quite a few women, 43%, that were born outside of the United States. In terms of household income, 72.5% had household incomes of less than $30,000. Taking a look at food security, we found that 80% of the women were food secure, whereas 20% were food insecure. And taking a closer look at food insecure women, we found that 60% were food insecure without hunger, and 40% were food insecure with hunger. So we used chi-square analysis to determine the association between food insecurity and demographic factors, and we found that women that were married or living with a partner had a 72% decreased risk of being food insecure when compared to women who were food secure, and this had a p-value of 0.045. In terms of women who received financial support from the baby's father, we found that those who received support had a 0.67% decreased odds of being food insecure when compared to food secure women with a p-value of 0.058. Factors that were considered non-significant, including age, education, immigration status, race, Hispanic, working status, and household income. So we used T-tests to determine the association between food insecurity and dietary quality, and we found that in terms of the healthy eating index, that food insecure women had significantly lower scores when compared to food secure women with a p-value of 0.031. And we also used T-tests to determine the relationship between food security and psychosocial well-being. In terms of the CESD-10, we found that food insecure women had a significantly lower score on the scale when compared to food secure women with a p-value of 0.001. In terms of perceived stress, we found that food insecure women had a significantly higher score compared to food secure women with a p-value of 0.001. And in terms of self-esteem, we found that food insecure women had there was a suggestive association between food insecurity and self-esteem with a p-value of 0.084. Factors that were considered non-significant included partner individual support and body mass index. So in summary, the percentage of women that were food insecure in our sample was 2 times the national average and 3 times the government's 2010 goal of less than 6%. Our data suggests that food insecurity among urban pregnant women is associated with poorer dietary quality, greater stress, lower self-esteem, and greater depressive symptoms. In light of the studies I mentioned earlier, we should also be concerned for the health of the fetus born to women who lack adequate nutrition because they may be at significant risk for adverse birth outcomes and chronic conditions later on in life. So what can we do to decrease the problems associated with food insecurity among pregnant women? Well, our study suggests that the need to develop interventions that are focused on two different things: nutritional services that would provide education so that these women understand that nutrition is important during their pregnancy, and assistance programs that ensure that these women have the resources to have adequate nutrition during their pregnancy. And the second thing is psychological support services, because we found that these women were particularly vulnerable to certain things such as depression and stress. I'd like to thank you all for your attention, as well as give special thanks to my mentor, Dr. Janelle Munzinger, who's here today, as well as my dad and family and other family and friends who came out with me. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Our next presenter is Ms. Leslie Stewart, that is a third-year medical student at Stanford University School of Medicine. Ms. Stewart has a Bachelor of Arts in Biology and minor in Psychology from Northwestern University. She is a research assistant and investigator in several projects, has received several honors and awards, has been also presenting and publishing a research already. Ms. Stewart will present a presentation titled Maternal Employment Instability and Childhood Overweight, a Longitudinal Study. Please, Ms. Stewart.